If you have a broken guitar, don't fret. Take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson to Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We'll have you fretting your guitar in no time at all. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, we love guitars.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast. It's LiesOffice.com. Joining us now with the Wisconsin Working Families Party, our friend Peter Rickman from Milwaukee. Peter, how are you today?
I'm great, Sly. Thanks for having me on. Happy holidays.
Oh, they're the happiest. They're, you know, and I'm actually going to celebrate this year by spending all my holiday money in rubles since we're under the Politburo now. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's good. You're getting a jump on January 20th converting to our new currency. I think that's wise. We'll all get those nesting dolls for Christmas from Santa Claus.
Nesting dolls.
I don't know what we have to call it now in our Russian Orthodox Church.
That's right. The official state church will be the Russian Orthodox Church. By the way, the band Pussy Riot came and sang with the Solidarity Singers about a month ago. I suspect they'll be persona non grata in the U.S. as well now.
So that's who we have to blame for this.
This is Pussy Riot's fault. let's take a look at the Trump cabinet. Do you see a lot of hope there, Peter?
I see a lot of dolts there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you like that little
very good
landlord. I think what we're seeing out of the Trump cabinet is, you know, not just a mix of billionaires and military generals, but, you know, it's not overstating it to say that there's a little bit of creeping fascism, trying to normalize the idea that we put the billionaire class and the military in charge of all things in our government. You know, merge the corporation and the state, as the people who study this kind of thing call it. And, you know, I think what we're seeing from the cabinet, you know, notwithstanding Rick Perry, who really does personify the dope part of it,
warning. I find it a bit disconcerting, but I find him least offensive of any of the people.
I mean, they're those glasses that he wears.
They make him very sharp.
They lead me to believe that perhaps he's some sort of intellectual.
And by the way, I never really thought we'd have a defense secretary who has openly said in a hot microphone that he enjoyed killing people. That is a first as well. Mad Dog Mattis is supposed to be one of the more reputable people in the cabinet.
Seems like a warning sign when your defense secretary has a nickname of Mad Dog.
Mm-hmm. How about the Department of Management now? The new department, the new cabinet secretary that Trump has set up with the CEO from Carl's Jr. and Hardee's.
You almost had me fooled there. I was like, you want to talk about the Office of Management and Budget?
The podcast
is a little smarter than most radio that gets broadcast, but I didn't realize we were going that long.
No, this is a new cabinet secretary, the Office of Management and Automation.
The office of the Department of Worker Screwing, and I think I have to congratulate Donald Trump on his choice of Andrew Posner. I guess I don't even know how to say it out loud without sort of scowling. In that, you know, if this administration is going to be committed to anything other than a total obliteration of workers' rights and the total immiseration of working people. I mean, they could have chosen very differently, but man, they nailed it with Donald Trump setting up his administration to be the most anti-worker in contemporary American history. They probably could not have picked someone better to head that department. I mean, this guy doesn't believe in the minimum wage, even though that department is in charge of enforcing the minimum wage. He doesn't think that working people ought to have rights on the job, and that's the agency that's set up to educate, inform, and enforce rights on the job. He doesn't believe this new cabinet secretary in even having workers employed to do the work that makes this country's economy go, makes the businesses work, and turns things around every day, including hamburgers. Whether they're delicious or not is anyone else's judgment here.
So
this is a cabinet secretary whose entire mission in life, continuing upon his leadership of a major fast food corporation, is going to be to stick it to workers and screw workers. And I think it's high time that working class people recognize what Donald Trump is: a charlatan, a con man, and someone intently focused on further entrenching the rule of the billionaire class and their enrichment at the expense of the rest of us who work for a living.
So as we kind of do post-mortem, by the beginning of the new year, I want to stop doing post-mortem here with my guests, but for now, we still need to take a little look back. Were you able to watch any of the discussion from Kenosha the other night with Bernie Sanders meeting some of the Trump voters?
In fact, I was there in the hall.
Did you say hello to Charlie Sykes for me?
In fact, he sat one row in front of me and to the left. We did not exchange pleasantries, nor did I with State Representative Samantha Kirkman, one row in front of me to my right.
Hope you stretched your legs a little bit there when you were sticking your feet out in front of him, just a little kick.
Well, Senator Wirch was seated in front of me with his lovely wife, I didn't want to disturb them because, the truth is there are very few people in the legislature who've been more of a stalwart advocate for raising wages for working people than Seth.
I like Senator Wirch, with the exception of him ordering a stinky tuna fish sandwich on an airplane flight where he was sitting next to me. I like him a great deal.
Well, not all of us are perfect, Sly. Even you and I have faults, although no one has scientifically proven either of us having them.
And, of course, Senator Wirch is the last person to defeat Reince Priebus.
I shuddered when you said his name. I mean, it's always given me the willies.
All right,
he's like one of the most powerful bureaucrats in America.
Now that we've stuffed about 50 snarky comments in the beginning of this interview.
I like this podcast thing.
Let me ask you about your observations as the Trump voters were interviewed, including the guy that voted for Trump but then voted for Democrats down ballot, because he is the exception. What we saw this year was most people that voted for Trump voted for Republicans up and down the ballot.
Yeah, thanks guys, for another 6 years of our dumb Senator Ron Johnson. It was a fascinating look at the ability of left-wing populism to counter right-wing populism. And I think for those of us, whether we do it for a living, like I have the great privilege to do, organizing and mobilizing working people to build real power in the political arena and otherwise, or you just, an ordinary, everyday person who sort of has a brain in your head and recognizes that working people have been getting screwed and we need a political system that responds to it, knowing that it's been rigged by the billionaire class and needs to be unrigged by collective action, we've sort of recognized that it's dreadful how absent the political landscape has been of a real, viable left-wing populism, something that names enemies and calls out the problems for what they are and puts forward solutions. And I think that's part of what Bernie Sanders succeeded with in his campaign. And Bernie's candidacy demonstrated that not only is there a real market and constituency, there's a hungering appetite for this kind of thing in the political process. And I think what we saw at the taping of Chris Hayes, is just one more data point in a pretty thick and clear and straight line pointing the direction forward for Democrats. If Democrats are going to win, and if progressive forces are going to win in the electoral arena, and that's getting out there and saying that the billionaire class in Wall Street has rigged the system at the expense of the rest of us, and that working people whose living standards have not just stagnated but declined, and whose kids don't have a future brighter than the present generation, are sick and tired of this, and we want a different direction. And I think what we heard Bernie Sanders do is sort of break through what right-wing talkers have been able to concoct as far as this protective cocoon around a slice of the working-class electorate and a bunch of the middle-income, maybe even white-collar-ish folks who've been the bedrock of the Republican Party. So when the Trump voters on stage were talking about things like, you know, we're sick and tired of paying our fair share of taxes, and they want to come and gut Social Security and Medicare, take that away from us. Bernie Sanders very calmly and compellingly said, you know what, we're going to make the billionaire class on Wall Street pay their fair share of taxes, you know, get it from the corporate interests who've been skating on their responsibilities for so long, and the rich folks who've unloaded the burden on the rest of us. And that's how we're not only going to protect Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, but we're going to expand and have real public financed health care. We're going to have real retirement security. And by the way, we're going to have free college and make massive infrastructure investments. And you can just see the eyes of the Trump voters get wide, and their ears open up, and their political presence totally changed. Bernie Sanders is able to break through, and, you know, even on that small-scale stage like that, I think you could see what the possibilities are for the long haul of building left-wing populist politics to change our political fortunes.
There was a bit of diversity in that group. Some of the people were persuadable to Bernie, and then there, the woman who clearly had been a Republican voter for a very long time. There's different types of Trump voters, but the one thing that... the one thing that's kind of gone missing, and we probably don't have enough data yet to tell, how many people really switched from Obama to Trump, or how many people just stayed home?
Well, I think that's an incredibly insightful point, and it needs to be repeated over and over again. And I think, you know, some of the smart political professionals ought to be studying this and not just accepting at face value.
They also ought to learn how to poll.
Well... you know, as long as we're airing some grievances here around Festivus, I mean, I got a whole list. If you give me a moment, I can
bring it out.
The political class here, as an object of scorn, is just a subset of my grievances to air. But I think your point is pretty critical here, Sly, and that's it's always one of those things where, you know, you want to learn what happened so you can figure out what to do in the future, not just what went wrong so you can bitch about it. You know, point fingers, but so that you can figure out what tools we need to have in our box as we go forward. So here's what I think happened. I think there are a bunch of people who were Obama voters in 2008, 2012 who stayed home. I think there's a small slice that flipped to Trump. I think, and I'm talking here in particular about, you know, what is the plurality, if not majority, of demographics in Wisconsin, and that's working class white folks. Which, you know, is a critical part of building any sort of progressive future, which, by the way, is how Wisconsin built a progressive tradition upon working-class white people. So let's not write anyone off here. So there were a bunch of working-class white people who voted for Obama twice, and partly because he put forward an economic argument about, and I'll say this, a little bit tempered and weak, but still put forward an economic argument about the billionaire class and Wall Street rigging the system, about trade sending our jobs overseas, you know, shitty trade deals. I'm sorry, bad trade deals.
Oh, you can say that. It's a podcast.
Oh, yeah. We can talk about shitty trade deals all day long.
Right.
You know, Obama put forward an economic argument that made sense to people, and so there were a bunch of working class white folks who came out and voted for him, rightly. And I think over the last 8 years, it's no surprise to say that working class people, not just working-class white folks, working-class people have not done so well because the policies with which the Obama administration governed, and frankly the obstruction of the Republican Congress preventing others from going forward, you know, haven't delivered a substantial change in people's material situation. Their incomes aren't going up, their wages aren't rising, their health care costs are higher. That's what you can spend all day long talking about that. And I'm happy to do so, but I think the simple summary here is working people's lives aren't improved. Even though we have a, you know, much fuller employment economy. So a bunch of those folks stayed home, and in the absence of any sort of real left-wing populist critique of what is happening in this political economy, and credible arguments put forward, and you know, for those who would say, oh, why didn't Hillary Clinton just run on a more populist message, I think the short answer is she wouldn't have been a credible messenger. That's not an authentic place for her. It went to work. But in the absence of a left,
would have been nice if she'd come. Would have been nice if she'd actually visited the state. That would
have
helped.
Well, I mean, there's other things like that which I think we should come to here.
Her performance singing with Bon Jovi and Jimmy Buffett on Long Island in the Hamptons. I think that was a real vote getter in Manitowoc. What do you think?
Yeah, where all those laid off blue collar machinists. We're looking for leadership. They said, we want to know who can sing with the washed up rock and roll has-beens of the 70s and 80s. You know, pretty important thing there in Manitowoc. In this absence of any sort of real left-wing populist critique, working people are always going to be, looking for who offers some kind of populist argument. And so they were susceptible to the right-wing populist argument and have been for a long time. So there are a lot of folks who've not been voters, who came out to vote, and they voted for Trump, in addition to a small slice that converted from being Obama voters to being Trump voters.
You know, you think about it, though, working class people of all sorts, and not just blue collar, but working class people in general, and this covers a wide range of people, they've been disappointed about incomes through quite a few presidents in quite a few years now of both parties.
Well, they've all failed us. We're right to be disappointed and angry about this.
All right, but, as bad as evidently the Democratic brand in rural Wisconsin is right now, and it's just atrocious. I mean, the brand has been damaged greatly, some of it through dishonest advertising. Some of it is, frankly, not necessarily bad messaging. It's the obstructionism of the Republicans obviously did a lot of damage to Obama. The Affordable Care Act, I think, damaged the brand not only of the Democratic Party. It damaged Russ Feingold's brand. It wasn't his fault. They tried to do the right thing, but let's face it, if they'd waited for single payer, I don't know if they ever would have been able to get that through. These are very complicated things, and there really is no one easy solution here. When I hear people go, we need a better message. Well, we need a better message, but we need a better outcome.
Well, I think it's not just a message. I mean, we can't just, come up with clever words and phrases and, spit shine some turd and say, here, this is who we are, and I expect that people are going to vote for it. We actually need a fundamental commitment to working people that is the basis of governance, when in power, and of the opposition when in the minority. And I think, again, I mean, I don't want to make Bernie Sanders into a saint, but, geez, I mean, this is one of the most successful American politicians in recent memory to go national with an unabashedly left populist message that everyone in the political class from the start dismissed as a total dud. And here he came within, a pretty small margin of actually being the Democratic Party's nominee for president.
And would have become president. I don't have any doubt about that.
This isn't just ideological flights of fancy of people like Sly and Peter. This is based upon some real science here. This is what the polls
say. The only state that she won that he might not have would have been Virginia. But I think he certainly would have won Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And he would have carried Minnesota by a bigger margin, because let us not forget Hillary Clinton almost lost Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty shocking here. I think that there's a tendency here to, underanalyze and overanalyze November 8th, 2016. I think there are some people who are talking about some tactical mistakes that the Clinton campaign made, like not showing up in Wisconsin or in Michigan. I think there, and we could say a lot about some of the on-the-ground political campaigning realities of voter engagement, mobilization, et cetera, et cetera. But then there's some who say, look, she won the popular vote by almost 3 million votes. I say, well, that's great, but that's not how we conduct presidential elections in America. We have 50 single state elections, and by the way, we lost on our chance to take a Senate majority. Like, we conduct politics on the playing field with the rules set in front of us. And so I think there's two big sort of longer-term trends that point back to having, a vital necessity to build a left-wing populist politics that not only celebrates but prizes working-class people in our institutions. And one is there's no way to build a governing majority in America. And by that, I mean winning the White House, having enough Senate seats and House seats to actually move an agenda and talk about things like not just having the overly complicated insurance company sponsoring Affordable Care Act, but having, you know, a public option and maybe even talking about single payer with respect to health care or any number of other, you know, key progressive keystone issues, I guess you could say. There's no way to have a governing progressive majority in America without retaking the Rust Belt. You can slice this country any way you want. You can talk about demography as destiny. You can say things like there's a new American majority and a rising American electorate, whatever. But unless and until we figure out a way to knit together the states from Minnesota to Pennsylvania, clustered around the Great Lakes that used to be the industrial production center of America and have large industrial unions that moved the votes and political and economic interests together of working class people, unless and until we build a real political strategy to retake those states, we are going to be stuck playing defense, potentially in more and more adverse conditions. And then the second thing here is what happened on November 8, 2016 was less about 2016 and a lot more about what's happened over the last 40 years. And the failure of the Democratic Party writ large, which is not monolithic, I recognize that, to actually build a working class populist politics that says dealing with the political economy here, the billionaire class in Wall Street rigging the system at the expense of the rest of us, and the immiseration of working class and poor people, not having a plan to make this economy work for all of us, and at times being frankly dismissive of the needs and interests of working people here.
All right. I want to ask
you, we need to fix those.
I want to ask you some questions about things that at the surface are shallow but could be important as far as outcome. A woman running. Did that have an impact on this year's election? Was, you know, and I'll never use the term, is America ready for a female president? But did sex, because I think that's a stupid way to put it, but did sexism play a role in this election? Some have always said that electing an African-American male is much easier than electing a female. There isn't much of a record of countries electing female leaders. Second, it may seem shallow, but picking candidates that have authentic and good personalities. The Democrats didn't pick a candidate whose public persona, although my understanding is her private persona is much better than her public persona, they picked somebody with a personality that a lot of people don't like, that was off-putting. And third, and this is a tough one to reconcile, but is this partly the voters' fault for not paying attention and for being, frankly, a very poor judge of character and voting with a certain amount of animus and what's the new book, The Politics of Resentment? I know I gave you a lot there to chew on.
That's like, hey, let's talk about everything that's going on in American politics. You got to throw in there something about, you know, the rigging of the system by the billionaire class in Wall Street and their control over the rules of the game.
No, but I want to stick to shallow things here. This is the shallow portion of the podcast.
Well, okay, let me try to take these up one by one. I don't think American voters are so sexist and misogynistic in the way that they make political choices that they would not choose a female president or a female head of state, in that there's not that much difference between the United States and, say, Germany, for example, or Chile, or any number of other places. You know, you want a macho culture, look to, you know, a macho political culture, look to a great deal of Latin and South America. And there have been a number of female heads of state there. Like, I just don't think that there's an American political wall erected against women taking on the role of the head of state in that we're so different from other places. At the same time, it would be foolish for us not to recognize that there is tremendous sexism and misogyny and, you know, in a patriarchal society, as the grad student at UW Madison put it, and a lot of others do too, because it's right. And I think that has to do with setting the essential backdrop for a lot of American politics when gender and sex are at play. So I think that that can be broken through. I think that this, you know, Hillary Clinton, probably the most successful and important female politician in American history, may not have been able to break through, particularly because of some of those other points that you brought up. You know, I don't know about the personality thing. I think, you know, this whole idea of, you know, people want to, they're gonna vote for someone they want to have a beer with, you know, as been phrased. I think people are looking for someone that they feel genuinely cares about their interests, their needs, understands them to a certain degree, and is willing to do something about it. And I think it's, you know, less about personality and it is more about, do people see their needs and concerns and interests reflected in those folks? And that can take a number of different forms. It's not just, you know, straightforward. And I think, you know, people recognized that Hillary Clinton, you know, probably doesn't have that deep and fundamental commitment to working class people. You know, a rock-ribbed commitment to a set of governing
so
principles.
So how did a guy who has ripped people off his entire life, ripped off the kind of blue-collar, put union people aside, the sort of blue-collar entrepreneurs that are a little more conservative socially, that have started up construction companies and woodworking companies, cleaning companies. He's ripped guys like that off his entire career.
Yeah, he's a rat bastard of a businessman, no doubt about it.
So tell me, why do they identify with him?
I think it's misunderstood that there's some narrow way to define, you know, a voter's interest or a constituency's interest. I think that what Donald Trump geniusly did was tap into the anger and the frustration with the political establishment. And there's no greater representative of the corporate elite political establishment than Hillary Clinton. And, you know, he was able to say, look, they've never accepted me, and I don't like them. And look at how they're coming at me. And, you know, let's stick it to them. You know, this drain the swamp slogan that he adopted wasn't his own. It was just sort of him reflecting what he knew appetites of the American people.
Ironically, it was Donald Trump quoting Nancy Pelosi, which is a pretty funny. It's a pretty funny.
that's quite the odd pair there.
Isn't it really?
And I think this gets to your point, though, Sly, about the politics of resentment. And, you know, I think for people like you and me, who ain't no stranger to actually talking to working people about politics and about governance, you know, there's a tremendous degree of resentment and frustration and anxiety and anger about what's happened in this country in terms of, you know, we used to have the world's largest middle class that was expanding. It wasn't perfect, but we were addressing largely a number of the exclusions to the middle class. But we had a middle class built upon decent work for people who wanted to do it. And again, I'm recognizing that there are a bunch of contradictions in this, but, you know, it used to be that if you were willing to put in 40 hours a week on the job, you know, whether you had a PhD or a high school degree, you could make a decent living for yourself and have a reasonable expectation that your kids were going to do better than you, and so on and so forth.
Now, we haven't seen an American president do that since Lyndon Johnson. So on the one hand, he had his war on poverty and did a lot of really great things. I kind of like him, but you know, on the flip side, he sent working class people to their deaths in Southeast Asia. So, you know, that didn't balance out so well.
Well, this is still American imperialism as a governing assumption here. I mean, I'm not going to. Well, you're really taking up the big topics here, Sly. You're sort of bowling me over here, this whole podcast thing. You're like the new, you know, political talk intellectual.
It was from getting kicked out of the UW Platteville after my freshman year. It's what built my that's what built my intellectual capacity.
Well, they couldn't handle you, frankly.
No, they couldn't.
I recognize that. Look, I got to say this. We have a working class electorate, a working class majority in the electorate that basically has been getting screwed and knows it and is sick and damn tired of it. and recognizes, this is the important point, and I'm going to get to this thing about blaming voters. There's a working class majority that is getting screwed, knows it, sick and damn tired of it, and recognizes what is going on. They know the billionaire class in Wall Street has rigged the system. It works through this political establishment to maintain a system that ain't working for the rest of us. And, you know, people will lash out when the only choice they are given is, you know, the liberal wing of the corporate political establishment and a right-wing populist. They're going to go with the guy who's at least, you know, banging away, raging about what is going on that starts to sound a little bit like what is happening in people's lives and what, you know, they see with their own two eyes. You know, Donald Trump is fundamentally wrong. I think he's a proto-fascist, if not worse. But what he was putting forward with his right-wing populism that is a lie and a total con job for working people, at least he was naming some of the frustrations and anxieties that people have and putting a little anger into it. And so that's on us that work in this world of politics to build a credible, grassroots-driven, lowercase d democratic people's populist politics so that there's a way that we can give a real alternative and a real choice to people to not just say, we recognize what your anxieties are, your anger is. We see that we're all getting screwed and we know why that is and who's responsible for it, but that we have a way forward that isn't about blaming immigrants. It's not about saying that Muslims are, you know, a terrorist force in our midst. It's not about, you know, hating women and, you know, exploiting every last
Oh, you don't think we should go ahead with the grab women by the pussy model? You don't think we should go that route?
You know, Hillary Clinton was right. Some of Donald Trump's supporters are deplorable. She didn't say that all of them were. I think she was really right on about this. She said that there are some people who didn't just say, oh, yeah, well, that's what Donald Trump says. I don't, you know, that's not really like how he's going to govern. He's just sort of uncouth. There were some of Donald Trump's supporters who celebrated that approach, and whether it was about saying something like that or, you know, calling Mexican immigrants rapists and drug dealers. Like, there were some people who really took that up. And
yeah, the interviews outside his rally in Eau Claire with some of the women who were calling the women who had been complaining about his sexual harassment, calling them whiners and babies. Yeah, that was a little bit on the troubling side. All right, if you want more information about the Wisconsin Working Families Party, how do you go about that, Peter?
Well, you go to the internet and you type in workingfamilies.org /Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
Now, can I close with one thing here, Sly?
Certainly.
Do we have room for that?
Certainly, Peter.
I think now is the time more than ever for those of us who believe in fighting the boss class, fighting the billionaire class in Wall Street, and building a politics of working class people's interests first and foremost, to organize and fight in the streets and work very diligently and smartly towards electoralizing an agenda for populist revolt in 2018 and beyond. And these moments, these very dark times that can put people down, can drain our hope and optimism for the future, are exactly the times when the agitators and the organizers and the people with a brighter vision for what this country can be like need to redouble our efforts. And, you know, we need real political organization to carry that forward. And now's the time for people to join the Working Families Party in building this left-wing populist front that is going to reverse the direction of this country, take us away from fascism, and take us more towards the social democratic future of egalitarian democracy that is the fundamental American promise.
So what you're saying is that the Democrats should run Ron Kind for governor.
They should run Ron Kind right into retirement, and Sly for governor 2018 is my slogan until I hear a better candidate.
Well, you better start listening very carefully, because that would be an electoral disaster.
Why? Because we'd sweep 60-plus percent majorities, and You know, we'd have a great time in the governor's mansion.
If you,
come on.
If you'd like to look at my scrapbook dossier of how I've made the news over the last 30 years, I think you'll see that that would be that would probably not be a good choice. But I appreciate I appreciate the flattery.
There might be some of what the political class calls gas.
There may be a few. Peter, thanks for coming.
Joe Biden looks smooth.
Oh, my God. Peter, thank you for coming on the podcast today.
Thanks, Lai, and best of luck to you with this new endeavor. I think this is
really it isn't really a new endeavor. It's just a continuation. We've always kept Sly's office kind of as its own entity in these podcasts, and podcasts have been getting a lot of downloads, but since it's exclusively podcasts for this contact, people really are this content, people really are eating them up. So we're very happy about that. Peter,
I think people are ready to run with this, and I think your show is a vital instrument here for those of us who want to change the direction of our state in this country. Just really thank you for keeping the fight alive on the airwave,
all right,
whether it's on the internet or the radio.
Peter Rickman on SlysOffice.com.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.